Welcome back.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Kirby.
And this is
the Killer Babes.
Oh, your voice went out. Well, that was good enough. This is episode 31. Yes, comes after 30. This week we have another true crime episode.
For those true crime fans out there.
We were just saying we don't know. Can you guys tell us what your favorite episodes are, like, so we know? Like, do you guys like true crime? Or do you guys like paranormal? Or did you guys like all of it? Would we actually change what we do?
Probably not. Because right now, I don't know if you see the episode list, but it's a pretty good mix, I think.
Yeah.
We try to do like every other or every other other. And do true crime, paranormal, true crime, paranormal, weird, paranormal.
Yeah, we like to mix it up. Last week was Edgar Allan Poe,
mm-hmm.
which was not true crime at all.
But it was weird.
Yeah, so now this week we're moving into something else. It's kind of crazy.
Is it?
This episode.
Oh, this episode. Yeah. Like, is it really crazy that we mix it? I was like, I don't really think
No, that's not crazy at all. That's very normal.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, this episode blows my mind. It's bonkers.
It's actually really, really, really bad. Like, sad. And I've never heard of her.
No, me neither.
So, should we just tell them what we're talking about?
I think so.
Okay. Sure. This episode is about Sheila LaBarre, which, guys, I don't know if you've heard of her or not, but I cannot say her name without not thinking of Shia LaBeouf. So it's going to be a rough road for me.
And you made me watch that for the first time ever.
Yeah. Shia LaBeouf, running for your life from Shia LaBeouf. But this is running for your life from Sheila LaBarre. That's not funny. Anyway, she's a convicted murderer. She's better known as Sheila the Skin Peeler and Firecracker. She did have some artificially dyed red hair, so that might have something to do with it.
And her personality, too. I heard she had a short temper in town. Locals claimed.
Yeah, she's clearly got a short temper.
Testy.
Yeah, but, well, all right. We'll just tell you what happened. She was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences with no prospect of parole after being convicted of killing two men, Kenneth County and Michael DeLodge, in Epping, New Hampshire. She regularly enticed younger men to her farm in Rockingham County, where she would torture them. She claimed at her trial she was an angel sent by God to punish pedophiles. So Sheila LaBarre was born Sheila K. Bailey on the 4th of July in 1958. She grew up in Fort Payne, Alabama, as the youngest of five, with five siblings, so the youngest of six. Their father worked for the state of Alabama in the Highway Road Division, and their mother, Ruby Bailey, worked in environmental science services at a hospital. Her childhood was ruined because from roughly ages 2 through 6 years old, she was sexually and physically abused by her father and a family friend. Her father also physically and psychologically abused her. In 1976, when Sheila was 18 years old, she graduated from Fort Payne High School. She started working at a motel and then worked as an assistant administrator at a nursing home. Now, Sheila, at 23 years old, was a 5'5" woman who had a wild side. A little bit taller than me, a little bit shorter than Kirby. She married John. I don't know why. Yeah. I just like to put it in perspective.
I am 5'7".
I'm not saying my height.
Why?
Because the lady never reveals her.
That's weight.
Yeah, well.
You're like five. Wait, if you're in between, you're 5'4"?
No.
You're 5'3"?
No.
You're 5'1"?
No, you missed one.
5'2"?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's not that short.
That's what my license says anyway.
I don't know why I was like, you're 5'1"?
Are you 4'5"? Are you good?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
You seem a little taller, though.
That's because I have a demanding personality.
Yeah, your presence. Really
takes I'm just
up.
Kidding. But like, that is so true. How you picture people like being shorter or taller than they are.
Yeah,
I have that with so many people.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm not gonna name them.
Yeah,
but
don't.
And there's a lot of people I'm like, I picture you just being so short because you just have that personality. But in reality,
really?
Yeah.
Wait, is this like for TV people or like actual?
No,
people
real
you,
people.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I can see that. Yeah, definitely. I think your personality makes up a couple inches.
Yeah, I agree. Sheila married John Baxter on December 31st, 1981. Just under a... Oh, so they had a New Year's Eve wedding. I don't know about that.
I love it.
I'm undecided about that.
I love sparkles and I love sequins and I love New Year's Eve.
Okay. Just under a year later, she filed for divorce on December 14th, 1982. Maybe it's because they had a New Year's Eve wedding.
No, that's preposterous.
In 1982, she started hanging out with Ronnie Jennings and married him. She then had an affair with Sam Billiams. Around the same time, after a fight with Ronnie, Sheila, now in her early 20s, was in a car accident while driving after taking a handful of Placidals? I don't know. It's a sedative, sometimes used for insomnia. So sounds like it puts you right to sleep. She was in an 8-day coma, and when she came to, she was held in a 30-day psychiatric facility after attempting suicide. During her stay, she was sexually assaulted by an orderly.
In the spring, Sheila moved from Fort Payne, Alabama, to Epping, New Hampshire in 1987. She began living with Dr. Wilfred, or better known as Bill, Labar, who was a chiropractor, after seeing a personal ad that he had put. The same year, Sheila started taping every conversation she had in person or on the phone. Bill Labar was born in Norwich, Connecticut, and graduated in 1926 from Norwich Free Academy. By 1987, his first wife died, and his second wife left him. So now, at 60 years old, a lonely Bill moved in with Sheila, or I guess Sheila moved in with Bill, who was only 29 at the time.
31-year difference.
Yeah, not super crazy, I guess. I've heard larger differences.
I guess.
While Sheila never legally married Bill Labar, she did take his last name, thus becoming known as Sheila Labar. And, back to her nickname Firecracker, locals remember calling her Crazy Sheila. Labar then married a Jamaican citizen named Wayne Ennis in York, Maine, on August 22nd, 1995. So, interestingly enough, even though Labar was legally married to Wayne Ennis, she was still living with Bill at the farm. In fact, they both lived on the farm. Labar filed a report in December 28, 1996 that said Wayne beat her, but Wayne said she was the one who hit him, shoved him, and then fired guns at him. He says she forced him to spend nights outside during the winter. In letters to the newspaper, Wayne wrote, quote, "She had a handgun with her all the time. She points the gun at me and shoots over my head and told me she's going to send me back to Jamaica in a box. I was ashamed to let anyone know I was living like this in America," end quote. Labar got a divorce that same month. Wayne claims the divorce came when he caught her with another man. Wayne was deported in 2002 for overstaying his work permit. On April 2, 1997, Sheila Labar was granted a restraining order against Wayne. She then met her next boyfriend, James Brackett, a 27-year-old, and on September 25, 1998, Labar was charged with assault against Brackett. At the turn of the century, Labar's father died on February 15, 2000, and Dr. Bill Labar died on December 2, 2000, at 74 years old. Labar's behavior then becomes way more erratic. After Bill's death, Labar inherited his 115-acre farm and said she was his common-law wife. So, New Hampshire doesn't recognize common-law marriage. The state may recognize what can be considered a common-law marriage by death, and the requirements come in three parts. One, you have to cohabitate for 3 or more years preceding death of one partner. And two, acknowledge one another as husband and wife. And then the last one, generally presumed to be husband and wife in the community. This means that a cohabitating couple who are not legally married but have been together for 3 or more years and hold themselves out to be husband and wife are considered legally married upon the death of one partner. According to the law office in New Hampshire, it is the death of one partner which triggers the statute if all other elements are satisfied. A couple who simply cohabitate for 3 or more years is not considered legally married under the law. Bill's children from a previous relationship attempted to contest the will to get the money and the property, but they were informed they had a 50-50 chance of success and would have to pay $50,000 up front.
Yeah, that sounds like a risk that might not be worth taking.
Yeah, I think they just, I mean, they'd have to hire a lawyer and then probably take her to court for years on end just to contest this.
It's kind of crazy that you can do that, like that in New Hampshire, you can be considered married after someone dies if like people just say like, oh yeah, it seemed like they were married.
Well, you have to live together and stuff.
Yeah, for 3 years. But, like, how come it takes someone dying in order for that to be considered a marriage?
I don't know.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Massachusetts doesn't recognize marriage by common law. So.
But do they do it by death? I guess not.
No matter how long a couple lives together in Massachusetts, cohabitation won't ever change into a marriage without performing a wedding ceremony.
Okay, so yeah.
So the ceremony has to. I don't know. All states are different, so, I mean, I guess just based on your state.
Yeah.
It must be, like, it's pretty expensive to get married because you have to do all of the licenses, change all of your names, and then legally apply for all of the, like, certifications and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like in New Hampshire, if you just don't get married, but just say you're married, like, you're saving a lot of money.
I guess it's true, but I guess you can only get the person's money after 3 years of living with them.
Or if they put you in your will.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting tidbit. The estate that LaBarre inherited was the farm located on Red Oak Hill Lane, a public dirt road. The road continued through the property. There was a gate in front of the defendant's home that, when closed, blocked the road. On her property, there was a single farm dwelling with a barn, outbuildings, and some more pasture. Her property was bordered by a fence, barbed wire, and the gate between her property and the road. In 2002, now 43 years old, LaBarre assaulted James Brackett by trying to run him over with a car. Then the next year, LaBarre scratched and gouged Brackett's face and fired a gun at him. In 2004, LaBarre asked Michael DeLage to move to her farm. DeLage was a loner and developmentally challenged. LaBarre met him in a homeless shelter in 2004. He was last seen alive in 2005. A bone of his and his birth certificate were found at the farm in 2008. It is unknown still how he died. His mother informed the police that she was worried LaBarre was trying to kill him. On February 24, 2006, Sergeant Sean Gallagher of the Epping Police Department received two phone calls from County's family. On February 24th, 2006, Sergeant Sean Gallagher of the Epping Police Department received two phone calls from Kenneth County's family. They reported their son had been taken from Wilmington, Massachusetts by LaBarre. Gallagher knew the defendant, having dealt with her approximately two dozen times since 1995. Gallagher confirmed through the National Crime Information Center, NCIC, that the Wilmington Police Department had in fact listed County as a missing person. Gallagher and Detective Richard Cody went to LaBarre's home in Epping to check on County later that afternoon.
When Gallagher and the other officers arrived at LaBarre's home, the gate was closed. They climbed through the gates and Gallagher asked if County was there. LaBarre said he was not, but Gallagher told her that they had an NCIC report from Wilmington and asked if County was there again. LaBarre admitted he was, and then Gallagher asked if they could see County to check on his well-being. LaBarre initially said that County was naked, taking a bath, but then she later brought County to the door. A couple days later, LaBarre made three phone calls to Gallagher, stating that the police had no right to go onto her property, requesting a copy of the NCIC report that listed County as missing, and threatening to sue anyone who went onto her property again. On March 11, 2006, LaBarre went to Walmart with County, complaining of an assault on him. 3 days later, LaBarre calls her sister and rants about how County has demonic eyes, and she's scared, and she accuses him of being a pedophile. On March 17, 2006, Gallagher and Cody responded to a call that a suspicious person was acting disruptively inside the Walmart Supercenter in Epping. When they arrived, they found the defendant with County, who was slumped over in a wheelchair. County's skin was ashen, he had cuts on his face and hands, and one of his hands was swollen and not functioning normally. Now, you saw the photo.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused as to why there's a photo, but there is a photo of him in a wheelchair in Walmart.
Probably just from the security cameras.
No, it's like it's an actual photo, you can tell, and he's like looking at it and like not smiling, but like wheelchair carriage is filled with like gasoline tanks that she was buying in Walmart. I think the police took it.
Oh, maybe.
See? And yeah. And look at his hand. Like, you can tell it's swollen.
Yeah, no, his hand's probably broken. He does not look good at all.
No. It's pretty disturbing.
There is a video, a short video that they have for some reason too on YouTube.
Oh.
I don't know how they got. Maybe the police did take the photo. That's weird.
Right? It's, I don't, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he's obviously injured. I don't know how they got the photo, but you can just tell, like, it's not right.
I wonder if they, like, snuck a photo so that they could, like,
show
for evidence, but I don't,
maybe.
I guess you could do that. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, I guess it's public, right? You can take photos of in the public. LaBar told Gallagher that County received his injuries in a car accident. When Cody attempted to speak with County, LaBar told County, don't say anything. The officers accompanied LaBar and County out of the store, and Gallagher observed that County was leaning on a shopping cart and he couldn't walk properly. LaBar helped County into her truck, and this is the last time Kenneth County was seen in public. On March 22nd, LaBar calls Gallagher and complains he characterized her as, quote, a suspicious person On March 22nd, LaBar calls Gallagher and complains he characterized her as a, quote, suspicious person in his Walmart report, and she mentions that County has left her house.
On March 23rd, 2006, County's mother calls Gallagher and says she is concerned about County. She states County would have contacted her if he truly wasn't with LaBar anymore, and that he could not be on his own because he had, quote, mental deficiencies since birth. At approximately 1 a.m. on March 24th, 2006, so the next day, LaBar calls Gallagher to once again tell him County has left. She then plays a tape identifying herself as a justice of peace and then goes on to question County about raping children. County replies yes to LaBar, and at the end of the tape, Gallagher can hear heaving. LaBar is heard telling County to stop faking throwing up and says, quote, Kenneth County is now faking that he fainted. While this is all being played, Gallagher heard County crying and hysterically repeating the word why. Then the tape just ends. Concerned, police officers arrive at LaBar's farm around 6 p.m., obviously pretty concerned for County's safety following that tape. They find a burnt mattress outside. They then pass a second burn pile, and when they turn their flashlights to it, they saw a knife handle, tree limb clippers, a burnt chair, and a piece of bone about 3.5 inches long. No one answers the door, so police return to their cruisers. The bone was enough for Gallagher to call an assistant county attorney who said he had enough evidence to conduct a well-being check on Kenneth County. Three officers returned to the farm the next day and knocked on the door and banged on the windows. When there was no response, they kicked the door open. LaBar came up from behind them and welcomed them into her house, where she then gave them a room-by-room tour. At the time, Epping Police Sergeant Richard Cody recalls, quote, the house is filthy. There's rabbits running around everywhere. It stinks. There's rotten food in the sink, end quote. And then Cody continues on, quote, I see that there's a pair of his shoes, and I said, well, there's his shoes. She said, those are his shoes. I bought him new shoes. I knew she had because I saw him in a brand new pair of shoes. And later on, when we get to the basement door, and there are the new shoes at the bottom of the basement. So I said, there's his new shoes. There's his old shoes. What's he wearing? And she couldn't explain it. End quote. After the tour is complete, they ask about the bone, and LaBar says it's from a rabbit. When Gallagher says the bone is too big for a rabbit, LaBar says it was from either, quote, a rabbit or a pedophile. When asked about it further, LaBar denies saying anything. A warrant is then obtained to search the house and the outside of LaBar's home.
The police question her the next day, and it's then she gives the officers her suicide note. Investigators find other burn piles and find personal things dating back to 2005 that don't belong to either LaBar or County. An arrest warrant was issued on LaBar, but she had managed to get out of town with $85,000. She made her way to Revere, Mass. By receiving rides from truck drivers, which she rewarded them with sex. A couple days after being questioned by the police, she meets with Steve Martellio and has sex with him. The next day after, she has sex in Boston with Kenneth Washington. State fire marshals bring an expert dog to the crime scene at the farm and determine that a body was burned on the mattress outside LaBar's home. Peter Odom notifies County's family on how he died. An arrest warrant then goes out for LaBar. The police were able to identify his DNA from his army records and looked into forensic radiology to compare bone fragments with a live CAT scan that County had done. Sheila LaBarre was arrested on April 2, 2006, and charged for the first-degree murders of County and Delage. The police conducted a three-week search of her farm. Wilfred LaBarre's children petitioned a Rockingham County Superior Court judge to freeze her assets, including the Epping farm. They alleged she wrongly inherited the 115-acre estate using a 1988 will, in spite of one written 12 years later, providing for Wilfred LaBarre's children.
During the trial, Nugin, LaBarre's oldest sister, was the first witness called by the defense. She told the jurors about the two known occasions of LaBarre being molested as a child, once by her father and once by their father's friend as a toddler. Nugin said that throughout LaBarre's lifetime, her behavior got more weird and she became more paranoid and put on weight over time. Nugin recalls LaBarre becoming more paranoid after the death of their father and their brother. The jury also visited the former home on Reed Oak Lane, the farm, and the Walmart where she was seen with County. LaBarre attended too, wearing a stun belt. It was said that when LaBarre viewed her property, she had tears streaming down her face. Bill's daughter, Laura Malisi, claimed that LaBarre had threatened to shoot people. She stated she always disliked Sheila LaBarre and had warned her father against pursuing a relationship with her. According to the court records, LaBarre was indicted on one count of first-degree murder for the death of Kenneth County. She entered a non-negotiated plea of not guilty by reason of insanity and filed a notice of insanity defense. At the same time, she waived indictment and pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity to first-degree murder of the death of Michael Delage.
Sheila LaBarre admitted that prosecutors have enough evidence to find her guilty of murdering two former boyfriends, but argued she should be found not guilty of the grisly killings because she was insane at the time they occurred. Prosecutors said DNA samples from blood splatters in LaBarre's house matched both County and Delage. In addition, blood on the black buck knife found inside LaBarre's house matches County's DNA. LaBarre's septic tank was pumped during the investigation into County's murder and produced Delage's birth certificate, a bullet, parts from a cell phone, and a bone that is still being analyzed. Authorities also found a letter from Delage, notarized by LaBarre, in which he wrote that he was a child molester. LaBarre pleaded not guilty to murdering County and Delage on the grounds of insanity. Her defense attorney described her as a, quote, deeply, deeply sick individual, end quote. At the trial on May 2008, psychiatrists testified that LaBarre was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder and delusional disorder. James Brackett testified in court that he was in an abusive relationship with LaBarre for 6 years. LaBarre's ex-husband, Wayne Ennis, claimed she asked him to kill Bill. Jurors heard tape recordings LaBarre made of herself, and some featured her interrogating or berating her victims. Malcolm Rogers, a forensic psychologist who testified for LaBarre, said those tapes illustrated she had either a psychophrenic affect disorder or a delusional disorder, causing her to mistakenly believe the men were pedophiles. During the course of the investigation, detectives found hundreds of audio cassettes of LaBarre speaking to men on chat lines. Roger also went on to say that LaBarre believes she once died of a drug overdose but was sent back to Earth as an angel with special powers.
On the opposite side of the courtroom, Dr. Albert Druktinis, the state's forensic psychologist, testified that he believed LaBarre was sane based on reviewing more than 8,000 pages of the case file. He also interviewed LaBarre 3 times and spent more than 12 hours with her. He said her intense anger, obsession with pedophilia, and paranoia are signs of mood and personality disorders, but there was not enough evidence to show mental illness caused LaBarre to commit her crimes. Druktinis testified the following, quote, "She answered questions well. She tried to explain evidence away that made her look bad. This is not what someone sees over many hours in a person who is psychotic," end quote. In a taped interview played in court, LaBarre said she was driven to kill Delage because he was hurting and killing her animals. In a separate interview, she said County's death was an accident and that she cremated him not to cover up a crime, but to keep his mother from ever seeing the body again. LaBar also made statements to inmates and staff at the Stafford County Jail, saying she cremated County after he died on her property. According to SeacoastOnline.com, Sheila said he had fallen down the stairs, overdosed on drugs, or committed suicide. She mentioned she had used animal tranquilizers to paralyze people before. LaBar also told someone, quote, "It's only a misdemeanor to burn a body. I know my law." The jury deliberated for 13 hours after listening to the case for about 6 weeks. The jury found her sane and guilty of both charges. LaBar was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for first-degree murder in June of 2008. If LaBar had been found insane, she would have been sent to a psychiatric housing unit at a state prison, and every 5 years she would be reevaluated by a judge who would determine if she was ready to be released. As everyone filed out of the courtroom, Donna Boston, mother of Michael DeLage, is quoted having said the following to WMUR-TV, quote, "I am very happy she got two life sentences in prison. She can't get out and she can't hurt anyone else."
County's mother accused the Epping Police Department of negligence. Her lawsuit against the two police officers who had seen him in the store was rejected in 2010. In court, Officer Gallagher testified that County appeared, quote, "fine," and told the officers that he was there of his own free will. LaBar told the officers to leave her property, and they did. LaBar's appeal in 2010 was rejected. LaBar is currently serving her sentence in Lowell Annex near Ocala, Florida. Today, Sheila LaBar is currently serving two life sentences without parole after being found guilty for the first-degree murders of Michael DeLage, 38 years old, and Kenneth County, 24 years old. Police Sergeant Richard Cody says, quote, "Not yet. She needed one more victim to be a serial killer," end quote. But this case may not be over. Months after Sheila LaBar is locked away, police find a set of toes near the horse ranch barn, and they don't belong to Kenneth County or Michael DeLage. Are there possibly other victims out there? So, yeah, are there other victims out there? Who knows?
Yeah, because, I mean, like Cody said, technically, the technical definition of a serial killer is you need to have killed at least three people. So they know that she's found guilty of killing two. But,
right.
I mean, like we said, there was toes that didn't belong to either of them. Mm-hmm. Hello, there shouldn't just be toes without a person connected to them. So... I don't know. I think there's definitely a question of, like, this isn't over yet. So she could be a serial killer if they find one more.
Yeah. And the farm was recently, pretty recently, like within the last 2 years, just bought out by another family. It was not, Bill's family, unfortunately, because I know they really wanted the farm, but someone who just decided to move there, they got the land, and they did say in an article that they were hoping that they could start a new beginning there and that it wouldn't have such a dark past. But I mean, will they find anything maybe down the future? I mean,
yeah, I mean, and I was reading somewhere else that, like, even though she has been found guilty of this, whatever, like, technically they don't have to stop investigating this case. So, like, police officers, I mean, I think they would need, like, some kind of, you know, like, approval from a judge or whatever, but I don't know if they're still investigating, but they could be. So, like, they could be going back and still looking for evidence. And now, like, with a new field, I don't know. That just, I wouldn't want my like, first home. And police are like, oh, well, we're still looking for bodies here. So, can we come over tomorrow? Like, ew. I don't know.
Tomorrow doesn't look good. How about Friday?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I don't know. But, I mean, hopefully, you know, they can move past that and live there happily mm-hmm. ever after.
I hope they don't know the whole story because...
they have to. I mean, everyone in the community definitely knows.
I
mean, knows.
Yeah, I guess they do. That is just quite the sad one.
Yeah.
I would be thinking about it all the time, but.
Yeah, me too. I think so. I don't know if I could get over it. I don't know. But keeping with our theme of book clubs, if you are interested.
What do you mean theme of book clubs?
I feel like we always give like a book, you know?
Yeah,
like
if
you want more.
And I don't have a book club. But...
Well, I think we should start one. Maybe.
I don't read enough. I can't.
Okay. Well, if you are interested in reading, there are a couple books that you can read about this case. Kevin Flynn wrote Wicked Intentions, and then Michael Benson wrote The Burn Farm. And I read part of the burn farm, just the little clips. And they actually go in depth with the neighbors and people who knew her. So you can get some pretty cool firsthand, I shouldn't say cool, pretty interesting in-depth character analysis from that, because he interviews quite a few people in that book.
Yeah, because I would want to know like the weird quirks she does like just around town. Well, yeah. I don't know if I'd want to know, but I bet there's some stories.
There's some stories from the neighbors, like the neighboring farm. And I guess she liked horses. And right after Bill died, the neighbor went over and was just like, hey, there's some hay and horse feed. Like, can I bring it over? And she met him at the end of her driveway, because a farm has a pretty long driveway. So she met him at the very beginning, not end, sorry, the beginning. And he basically was like trying to give her the horse feed. And she was just standing there like with a gun and was like, give me it and then leave. Like, no thanks. No, you know, thanks for thinking of me during this hard time. So, I mean, that's probably the last time he ever asked if she needed anything. But
hey, it's New Hampshire. Live free or die.
Yeah. There's a lot of stories from locals. And, you know, I mean, maybe they exaggerated things, but I'm
sure. Probably not.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't.
Yeah.
And if you don't read books, you can watch the 2015 Inside the Mind of a Serial Killer episode of Sheila LaBarre, or there's a Sheila LaBarre documentary from the Discovery Channel's Deadly Women series.
Those are more up my alley.
Yeah, I think so.
I'll check those out.
So it's been covered, but I mean, again, with the female serial killers, well, technically not a serial killer, but female killers, I feel like they don't get a lot of notoriety.
Should they? I don't know. She sucks. Like, bad.
Like, bad.
Like, I don't like her. Obviously. Yeah. That's all.
That's what we got for you this week. It'll be interesting to see what the future holds and if anything else turns up or they find any missing links, because I think it's very possible that it could be a third person.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking this was like an older story, but it's not that old.
No.
I mean, she went up for appeal in 2010.
Yeah, she's still alive.
She was arrested. I mean, she went to jail in 2008, but yeah, so it's been like 10 years. So there could always be stuff happening. You never know.
You never know. Well, that's all we have for you for this week. Was that your stomach? Oh, my.
But it wasn't like, I'm not hungry. I don't know what it was.
Gas, maybe. Some indigestion. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So we got to end this now.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yes.
Thank you to everyone.
If you want to reach out, find us on Facebook, Killer Babes Podcast.
Instagram,
Killer Babes Podcast.
Twitter,
Killer Babes Pod.
Gmail,
killerbabes@gmail.com.
And that's all we got.
Yeah. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.